Joining us this morning is a man that myths and legends are made of. These are the stories that are spoken about in hushed tones, in quiet rooms. His name is Bill Edgar, and he is the author of a book called The Coffin Confessor. But that's not nearly as interesting as what he actually does. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
We are very pleased to have you. You come with an incredible story. So tell us a little bit about what it is that you do.
Look, what I do is I crash funerals on behalf of the deceased. So I'm actually paid by the deceased before they die to interrupt their funeral and read aloud what they've left unsaid.
Which I love, right? I love that you have the courage, have the balls, have, you know, the chutzpah to turn up to somebody's final hurrah and actually make it about them.
Oh, yeah, but I'm probably the only person that's actually invited to a funeral.
Does it get a bit raw, Bill? I mean, have you had fisticuffs and people really not, you know, appreciating you passing on the so-called last wishes of the deceased?
Not really. I mean, a couple of confrontations. But at the same time, what I actually do now, is, and I've learnt this from the very first funeral, is you've got to get the crowd on your side. And by that, what I mean is that I've got to say to the crowd, listen, I'm just a messenger. This is your loved one laying in the coffin. Listen to what they have to say. If you don't want to listen to it, bugger off.
Wow. And what sort of things do they say? What did the deceased ask you to say for them?
Look, it's a range. It's good, bad, funny, sad. But, I mean, you know, there's a lot of infidelity. There's a lot of people coming clean.
Right.
Wow.
There's a lot of people that can't say what they really want to say on their deathbed because, first of all, the person that they want to talk to aren't there and they're too weak. And the vultures in the family just come out from the woodwork. It's incredible.
You know, Bill, you've just now destroyed any notion of an afterlife because people who don't believe there is, you know, life after you pass on are relying on you to do the dirty work.
Well, you know what? That's another thing. People say to me, oh, you could just take the money and not turn up. But what if there is an afterlife and I have to meet all these people that I've taken their money from?
Mm. Oh, that's a very good point. Do you believe in God, Bill?
No, I'm an atheist, but I live and let live. You know, I don't dispute anybody believing in what they believe in. That's their life and their choices. I just, you know, I have mine and they're mine.
And Bill, it's not just about funerals, is it? Because, you know, my understanding from the book is that you're invited to do different things for the deceased as well. You've had to, you know, clean up rooms, certain dungeons and things like that. Is that's accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate. So it's funny how one door opens and another one, because in the business, it started as a joke. I just told a dying man that I crashed his funeral for him. Lo and behold, he took me up on the offer and I did just that. Now, out of that came another gentleman that gave me a call. He was a palliative care nurse. And he said, look, we got a gentleman here. He's had a fall. He's not allowed to go back home. He's going to die here. He's petrified of his son's going to his house and finding some certain items. What's the possibility of you going there and cleaning it? And I did just that. And it was like a sex dungeon that I had to clean out from the 88-year-old man's house. And I can understand him being petrified and mortified that his kids would find that.
Yes.
But that led on to other things where people were saying, okay, well, look, you know, I need this removed from my web browser or take my computers or, you know, I need my will.
Well, now you're like a CSI or an offshoot of that. I mean, there's been shows where people do clean-ups for dead people, but we're not talking blood spatters here. We're talking just stuff that's going to incriminate the deceased.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. But then it led to, you know, people saying, okay, well, if you can do all that, can you come to my viewing and pinprick my body because I'm petrified of being buried alive?
Oh, wow. So people want you to go and double check that they are in fact dead because...
Yeah, there's two aspects of that. One is that, you know, they're actually dead. And the other is they want me to open the coffin during the service to make sure it's actually them in the coffin.
You know, back in the Middle Ages, there were people like you who were paid by the local town to do that job. So really it's a lost art, Bill. I mean, you're bringing back something that's been going 500-600 years.
Exactly. And you know what? Anyone can be a coffin confessor. If you're at a funeral of a loved one and you're sitting there and you're listening to the BS that's going on, stand up, interrupt, and let them know what that person really meant to you and how they were.
Can I just say, though, Bill, I don't think most people would have the courage to stand up and do that. I think it takes a certain level of confidence to be able to do that.
Yeah, I think you're right, and that's probably why I'm the only coffin confessor in the world, I guess.
Absolutely.
But I mean, at the same time, it's not for the faint of heart or those that, you know, feel like they may be litigated or anything, but, you know, at the same time, it's their loved ones. You know, let's sit back, listen to what the people have to say in the coffin and enjoy their last words. I mean, it's their funeral, it's not yours.
Bill, do you think one of the reasons that you can be so empathetic with the deceased is that you yourself have had an interesting life? You know, my understanding is that that you spent some time in jail, that you were once a debt collector. You know, it's a very varied kind of life, which I guess would give you a wider understanding of the real world, perhaps.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my childhood was just stolen and ripped away from me from the age of 7 till I was 15. I mean, I was one of the youngest prisoners to go into an adult prison in Queensland. I mean, my life, my childhood was just horrific. I mean, my dreams were taught your nightmares, but at the same time, has it given me what it does? Yeah, it probably has. It's given me the courage and strength, but I guess I also see the vultures in the family all circling when someone's on a deathbed, and that gives me more strength and determination to help those people that really need a voice, and I give it to them.
How old were you when you went to prison, Bill?
I just turned 17.
Oh, God.
See, how do you overcome that? I mean, I know from reading a lot of your stuff, you said that you credit your wife with being your rock. I mean, that is a fairly hefty comment to make about somebody. She must be a hell of a woman.
Yeah, you know, when I met her, I'd stolen a school uniform off her clothesline and walked into a school called Southport State High School. And I walked into this classroom. The teacher didn't know she had a new student. She said, take a seat back there. As I walked to the chair, this girl spoke to her friend and she said, I'm going to marry that boy one day. And we've been together for 38 years.
That's a great love story. Wow.
Wow. What did she ever tell you what she was so taken with? Was it that you're just a good-looking rooster, or did you just have some kind of, you know, some people just have a presence, right? Like many years ago, I met Peter Brock, and before he even opened his mouth, that man had a presence about him. Do you think it was something like that for your wife?
I believe it is probably something like that, because I hold a lot of people's secrets too. And when I first meet the people, it's like an aura of trust, and they know that something's going to be done for them, and they just feel safe and confident. And I guess I project that for them and let them know that, you know, what I say will happen. And I guess my wife, when I met her, I mean, I was broken. I was a street kid. I just stole a uniform to go to school to be around kids. I think she saw that. I think she just, yeah.
That's a match made in heaven. That's the universe working in your favour there, Bill, because that, you know, those are the sort of stories that we just love to hang on to and talk about. I mean, that's a beautiful, beautiful story.
Oh, yeah. As I said, it's the reason that so many people that hurt me are still alive today is because of her.
People are still breathing because of your wife. Mm-hmm. I read that, actually, because of who she is in your life, which is incredible.
Exactly.
But to go from being, you know, a street kid, Bill, to, you know, going through the atrocities that you have faced and no doubt will have to endure forever, to then becoming someone who no doubt will have movies made about them. How did you ever expect it to be that big, I suppose, that big a change?
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, I always expected my life to turn because I made it turn. I just wanted to do something with my life and be somebody for my children. You know, that was the main thing, is just to prove to everybody that, you know, I wasn't the dumb kid that just sat in the back and did nothing and twiddled my thumbs. I mean, I actually learned, and I tried as hard as I could. I might have failed as many times as I've tried, but this is the odd time that I've won, and this seems to be a good one. I mean, I'm happy doing this.
You're clearly winning now. So who's going to star in the movie about the coffin confessor, Bill?
Look, I'm not too sure. I've spoke to a number of people, actors and people all around the world, and it's been great. The last person I spoke to was my agent, who said that a guy by the name of Marvin Wayans, he's put his hand up. He was out of White Chicks.
Yeah, Damon Wayans' brother, isn't it?
We love him. Yeah, he's hilarious.
I was thinking Tom Hanks could take on the job if you want.
Yeah, you know what? I'm thinking someone younger now so they can grow into the role and just keep it going.
Like a Ryan Reynolds or a Ryan Gosling or someone like that?
Yeah, well, Ryan's doing the Fall Guy here, so he's in Australia anyway.
I like Ryan. I reckon he's great. I reckon he'd be great at it. You know, and I sort of, I like his movies in the way. But, you know, they've named so many actors and I've been sitting with so many Zoom calls in LA and it's been great. It's a great ride. But at the same time, it doesn't happen overnight either. It's a long process.
It is a process. Who would play your wife?
I reckon she'd play it pretty well.
You reckon?
Either her or Jennifer Connelly, if you want. She's available now. Top Gun 2's over.
Look, you know what? I've always said that if the Coffin Confessor was a woman, it'd be Margot Robbie.
Oh, yes. We love Margot Robbie. A good Australian girl from the coast. I mean, how good's Margot Robbie?
That's who I always thought would be a great turn and twist on the whole thing, would be that. And even Greg Hadrick, who wrote Underbelly. And, he contacted me with his mate, John, and they said, look, we like the idea of a woman. You know, I thought it was a great idea.
It needs to be bigger than that, though. It needs to be a blockbuster. I mean, we want to see your name in lights, right? Like, it can't just go to free-to-air TV. This is going to be an epic story.
Well, that's where I came in, and I said, hey, why can't one of the wedding crashes die and the other one crashes funeral, and it takes off from there?
Oh, see, that's because I love the movie The Wedding Crashes. Yeah, that's a classic comedy.
Who's in that one? Owen Wilson. He's got to be in there.
Yeah, for sure. I think that'd be great. It'd be good, you know, to see it just come to fruition and to be a movie and that. Yeah, insane.
Absolutely brilliant, Bill. The book is called The Coffin Confessor by Bill Edgar. Bill, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Hi to all your listeners.